Hello, you are listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio, and this is Local Motion, our weekly local affairs show. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. On this edition of Local Motion, we'll look at two examples of the growing progressive movement, both nationally and locally. Two events in the listening area, the first a movie premiere in Paonia on Monday night, and the second, the D3 Indivisible Summit held Friday in Ridgeway, highlighted grassroots efforts to revitalize the progressive movement. Both events tie directly back to Senator Bernie Sanders and his high-energy campaign for president last year, and both emerged in response to the election of President Donald Trump. Waking the Sleeping Giant, The Making of a Political Revolution, is a documentary film about the election of 2016. The movie played at the Paradise Theater Monday evening for a fundraiser for League of Oil and Gas Impacted Coloradans, organized by local activist Pete Kolbenschlag. The movie has been playing around the country since it came out 2 months ago. KVNF News spoke with co-director and producer Jacob Smith about the film. We're joined in studio by Jacob Smith, co-director and producer of the documentary film Waking the Sleeping Giant, The Making of a Political Revolution. Thanks for being here, Jacob.
Oh, I'm happy to. Thanks for having me.
Waking the Sleeping Giant tells the story of the 2016 presidential race and the fight for civil rights, economic fairness, and a democracy that works for everyone. If you could, Jacob, kind of take us back to the beginning. You were a staffer for Bernie Sanders when you decided to make the movie, is that right?
Yep.
And talk about the genesis of the film.
Sure. We started to think about making a film back, as you said, when I was working for Bernie in his Senate office in D.C. I was his energy and climate policy advisor. And he started to sense that something interesting was happening all over the country and had started to do kind of a listening tour to a bunch of states, including a bunch of deep red states, and was finding this, was encountering a really energetic response to him and to his message. Nobody knew him outside of Vermont at that point, except for the diehard lefties. But he started to encounter people that were very fired up on the message, things he was saying. And there were a lot of other signs. We were seeing minimum wage ballot measures pass in red states. And Thomas Piketty wrote this massive economics tome that sat on the New York Times bestseller list for something like 25 weeks. And there were just signs that there was a real restlessness and anxiety around economic issues in particular. And we thought, well, shoot, we should, if Bernie runs, it was clear at that point on his staff, he was thinking about running for president. And our thought was, well, if he runs, we should do the film, the Inside the Bernie Campaign film. And pretty quickly realized that wasn't the best idea, partly because we didn't know for sure if he was going to run. So we could have invested a bunch of time and effort and turned out not to have anything for it. But more importantly, because we realized that he wasn't the whole story. He was part of a much bigger movement story. And that was, for us, that was really pivotal, because then we switched to, oh, Bernie's a character in this story, but we want to tell a much bigger story about the effort to create a rejuvenated or revitalized progressive movement in the 21st century. And we went from there, followed Bernie through the campaign and found four other people that we spent a lot of time with over the course of the campaign. And then even a little bit into 2017, and tried to tell this story that gets at what was going on around the country. What was this thing that Bernie was tapping into, like Elizabeth Warren and others, and Donald Trump for that matter? What happened in the election? And then probably most importantly, where do we go from here?
And you've talked before about how the movie kind of started out being about one thing and then became something else. At the beginning, you kind of wanted to portray the deep anxiety that everyone felt about the economic future. But then the racial justice movement charged up around that time and kind of entered the stage, and the movie became about something else. Talk a little bit about that evolution.
When we first started, we thought that the story was going to be about the effort to build bridges around the issue or set of issues of economic fairness, building bridges across the party lines. Because it felt like, okay, there's clearly something out there. It's about anxiety about economics, about job security, about economic future, about providing a better future for your family, all of those things. But the racial justice movement, particularly the Black Lives Matter, the movement for Black Lives, they blazed onto the scene. They forced their way onto the national stage, largely by, well, partly coming out of some of the largest protests or most visible protest in the wake of police violence against African Americans, particularly unarmed African Americans, but also then when they charged the stage, literally. When people like Martin O'Malley and Bernie and Elizabeth Warren were speaking, and they demanded that these activists that were these politicians or activists or candidates that were largely talking about economic issues start to think differently and take more seriously issues around race. So it became clearer to us. We were slow to recognize it, I think, but we did eventually, just like a lot of other folks on the what you might, what Van Jones calls the white left, the kind of economically focused left, which has historically been very white in its composition. We noticed, or realized rather, that we need to think about racial justice issues a little differently as well in the storytelling. So in a sense, the evolution of the story we told tracked the evolution of the left itself, which was forced to reckon with the racial justice part of the broader progressive movement. And so we shifted gears and began to focus a whole lot more on these tensions within the left itself, which in the end, we tried to make an argument for that being one of the most important challenges on the left we have to overcome if we're really going to build the kind of sustained political power around these values.
And then from my readings and seeing some of the reviews and watching the trailers, the movie really seems to have an angry tone. You know, people are pissed off. Why was the choice made to portray so much anger in the film?
It's a great question. Certainly, a lot of that anger is there. People across America, all walks of life and all geographies, they are frustrated and angry and concerned and anxious. I think that anger manifests across, some of it's around economics, some of it's around the way that immigrants are treated, some of it's around the way people of color are treated by the criminal justice system or the political system or economic system, but there's a lot of anger. So that's clearly a catalyst for the political energy we've all been witnessing over the last several years. So I think it had to be part of the story, because that's a core part of what's driving these efforts to organize around the country. But I think that we tried also really hard to capture the sense of agency. All five of these people that we focus on, the sort of characters in the story, they're not victims. I mean, they're all grappling with, or most of them are grappling with, traumatic, difficult circumstances that they shouldn't have to deal with. And yet, those are the circumstances they're in. But they don't see themselves as victims. They are part of what was so compelling to us about those stories is they're finding ways to organize and build power and fight back and take on the injustices and the inequities in the systems that they're bumping up against. And so, yeah, there's anger, but there's also a whole bunch of people figuring out how to build political power by organizing on the ground, as Amy Goodman says in the film, people feeling their power. And so that's this kind of complement to the anger itself. And then I'd also say there are at least a few folks in the film that talk a lot about the source of their advocacy and activism is about love for each other, love for their families, love for other Americans that maybe aren't getting a fair opportunity to participate in American democracy or in American life. So I think those things are all mixed up in there as well.
One of the issues I think that's really interesting the movie explores is that there's kind of a new paradigm. It's not so much anymore Republican or Democrat or conservative and liberal. Now it seems like the discussion is about establishment versus anti-establishment. How does the movie talk about that theme?
Yeah, I think there are two particularly important rifts on the left that we focused on and that we think are essential for the left to grapple with. One of those we already talked about a little bit, this gap between what Van Jones calls the white left and the black left. And that's shorthand for him. It's more like the economically focused, class focused left, which is mostly white, and then maybe the everything else, all the rest of the left, or the racial justice left. But the other rift that is, I think, equally challenging, and I don't think we can build the kind of sustained progressive power that so many of us want, is between, as you describe it, the establishment and the anti-establishment. And that's also true, I think, that cuts across on the Republican side. That frustration with the political establishment and economic establishment, for that matter, is not limited to the left. And we saw that so vividly in the results of the presidential race. So, yeah, we certainly grapple with that, because I think it's also deeply embedded in this political ecosystem, this political moment, that the establishment itself is clearly serving the interests of the establishment and not many people beyond that. And Donald Trump was clearly able to tap into that incredible anger at the idea that the system is rigged. And he's the only guy, his argument went, that is independent enough and brazen enough to challenge the system. And that was a compelling enough argument to a very large number of voters across the country, and particularly in some of these swing states that ended up determining the outcome of the race. So, yeah, I think that's also a central challenge. We certainly have to grapple with it on the left, but I think we have to grapple with it more broadly across the country as well, across the political spectrum.
And would you say this is a movie that's just for Democrats, or who should see this film?
It's definitely not a movie that's just for Democrats. We don't try and persuade anybody who walks into the film that you should believe progressive values or Democratic values or left-wing values. It's a film about the effort on the part of a bunch of people on the left to movement build. I think it's probably most interesting in general to people on the left who are trying to make sense of what just happened over the last several years and where do we go from here. But a number of We've had maybe a dozen screenings so far, and at least some percentage of the audience in those screenings has been Republicans or independents that tend to vote Republican, or Republicans or independents that voted for Trump. So not the audiences I just mentioned. And the reactions we've heard from them have been really largely positive. They may not agree with all the politics that the people in the film are espousing or advocating for. But a lot of them walk out, at least the ones that talk to us afterward, and tell us that the film helped them understand something about people whose circumstances are very different than their own. Like one of the characters is a school bus driver in Los Angeles. She's African-American, and she and her community are grappling with this enormous wave of violence by the LAPD against people of color, particularly African-Americans, but certainly not limited to. And that's as an example. And there's another character, a woman in rural West Virginia. This is a part of Appalachia that is struggling with deep generational poverty. And the same thing, people walking out of the film telling us that the story we told in the film helped them make sense of, maybe have some empathy for, these circumstances that are just very different than their own. So I think if you're interested in that, or if you're interested in understanding something about this moment, whether you share the politics of these characters or not, and especially if you are interested in the left and want to be part of how we build a successful political left, I think and hope the film has something to offer you and helps raise some questions, whether you agree with all of our arguments or not, that at least helps provoke and stimulate conversations that may help us all do a better job of advocating for these values that we support.
And that was filmmaker Jacob Smith. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much. For anybody that saw the film on Monday night and enjoyed it or want to find a way to share it with other people or screen it again, on our website, you can get a screening kit, which is exactly what happened here. Pete Kolpenschlag here in Paonia organized a screening as a fundraiser for a local organization. And we're offering the same thing to anybody around the country. So if you want to do a screening, jump on the website. The screening kits are available there. And you can use the film as a fundraiser for your own group or some other local organization in your community, or just to share it with folks that you think might be inspired or motivated by seeing it.
And to get a kit to host a screening of the film, the website Smith mentioned is all one word, WakingTheSleepingGiant.com. Secondly, on Local Motion, we're going to talk about the D3 Indivisible Summit that was held in Ridgeway last Friday. The day-long event brought together a large group of local organizers, activists, local elected officials, candidates for office, and concerned citizens for workshops and panel discussions. According to its website, D3 represents a progressive platform that joins farming and ranching communities with rural landscapes, small towns, and resort destinations. Constituents are united by a love of the West and the lifestyles that are integral to its heritage. D3 members advocate for common sense policy that upholds the pillars of the Constitution by working collaboratively with like-minded organizations across Colorado and the nation. While a part of Indivisible, a national grassroots organizing effort, D3 members work outside that network to form nonpartisan alliances that focus on issues that are relevant to the constituents of Colorado's Congressional District 3. Smith said that he is very familiar with Indivisible, and he talked about his impressions of the organization.
But it's clearly a response to all the things you and I have just been talking about. It's not the only one. There are an extraordinary number of groups of people across the country that are whose concerns are rooted in different values or different concerns or different politics that are finding ways to organize. And it certainly taps into that establishment, anti-establishment tension that you and I were talking about a minute ago. So yeah, that I don't know if Indivisible specifically is where they fit in the ecosystem of how much they specifically will be part of the answer in the long run, but they're clearly part of the ecosystem now, just as a lot of other groups are. And it's, from my perspective, it's really exciting. This is, the election results were pretty, from my perspective, pretty awful. And the response has to be to get out and organize and build relationships in communities in order to build political power to take on the kinds of political powers that produce the outcomes we saw in 16. And if we don't, then I think 2018 has the potential to be even worse than 2016, and the same for 2020 and beyond, not to mention local races and state races around the country. So yeah, I think the work Indivisible is doing, people that are involved with Indivisible around the country, that's so important to how we build from here.
Hundreds of people converged upon the 4-H Event Center in Ridgeway for the D3 Indivisible Summit. The event featured a day of workshops and panels presented on three different themes: messaging, building power, and outreach. Topics for panel discussions included using digital and social media, building organization and volunteer power, engaging with voters, and reaching out to millennials. The second round of workshops for the day featured a panel discussion called Voices of the District. This panel brought together a diverse group of people from District 3, all of whom represented a different piece of the progressive activism. KVNF News spoke with each of the five panelists and asked them why they wanted to be a part of the D3 Indivisible Summit in Ridgeway. First from Grand Junction is Gabriel Otero, a fourth-generation Coloradan. His family settled here as farmers and vaquero cowboys before Colorado was a state, and they instilled in him values of stewardship and sustainability in our relationship with the land. Otero enjoys working with folks from all walks of life in his role as an organizer with the Wilderness Society and with the Homeward Bound Homeless Shelter.
I wanted to serve on this panel because I was born and raised in Grand Junction. I'm a fifth generation Coloradan. My family's been involved in social justice issues. I work for the Wilderness Society, so I work on public lands issues as well, and this is a great opportunity to spread the word about the issues going on in Grand Junction and across CD3 in particular. We have a very diverse district here, you know, as far as geographic and economic. We have one of the wealthiest zip codes, and then we also have some poorer communities. So talking about those issues and finding common ground and setting partisanship aside, I think that's what's great about this D3 summit, is setting partisanship aside and really just getting to the core issues that Westerners care about.
Next is Julie Westendorf, a La Plata County Commissioner. Westendorf holds a law degree from the University of Virginia and worked for two legal practices in Durango before serving as a tribal prosecutor for the Southern Ute Indian Tribe and as a municipal judge in the town of Bayfield. Westendorf is also a real estate broker and maintains a private law practice.
I was pleased to be invited to serve on this panel because I think that my experience as a Democrat and my choices of communicating with people who may not necessarily see the world the same way I do, I think I've communicated well to learn what those folks think, and I think I've been able to learn ways to speak a language that they can relate to. And I worry that for Democrats, We're not as open-minded as we claim to be, and the other isn't necessarily an enemy, and we need to figure out how to find common ground with folks we might not initially think we have common ground with.
In some of your comments, you made reference to a disconnect between Democratic leaders and people in the agricultural community, especially out here in rural Colorado. How do you think that gap can be bridged?
Listening, authentically listening to what communities, what their interests are and what their concerns are, because I do think there's a lot more commonality than folks assume there is.
And what about Indivisible itself? What do you think the reception is out here for the West for that program, and do you feel like it can gain a presence out here in Western Colorado?
I'm excited about the effectiveness of Indivisible at motivating people to really look at what the role of government is in their lives and what they want of their government, that it be a government that serves them. And so mobilizing people to actually even think about what should their government do for them, what should their role in government be, and how can they hold their government accountable are all things that are really important.
The third panelist was Kira Hatton Sina from Pueblo, a consultant and young change maker who has served as a county planning commissioner and for numerous election campaigns. Hatton Sina has also worked with local nonprofits and businesses on strategic planning, marketing, risk and crisis management, governmental affairs, and more.
I was asked to serve, and I feel really blessed to represent my community of Pueblo. And I think it's important that voices from across the district are heard.
And one thing you said in your remarks that really resonated with me is about poverty. You know, in places where I come from, like Delta County, one of the poorest counties in the state, political issues that are so big like this don't really mean anything when you're poor. And like you talked about how you can't really run on health care if the person you're talking to is a voter who doesn't have health care anyway. And telling them that they're going to take it away isn't going to change their vote. How would you recommend connecting with the poorer populations in Western Colorado?
I think it's coming up with very real solutions to problems that exist. Whether that problem is a mother can't go to work because childcare is too costly, whether that's finding a really common sense solution to how do we lower utility bills. Sometimes if we can lower our utility bill even like 50% just by doing some really common sense changes around the house, that's a big deal. Being able to have a little more expendable income to put in other areas is a big deal. So saving $14 for an upper middle class family isn't a big deal, but saving $14, that's two meals for a low income family.
Next on the Voices of the District panel was fifth generation Gunnison rancher Bruce Allen. Allen is the vice president of the Gunnison Stock Growers Association. He is also on the boards of Gunnison Ranchlands Conservation Legacy and Country Natural Beef, and works on the Gunnison Public Lands Initiative Working Group. He graduated with honors from CSU with degrees in animal sciences and agricultural business.
Well, as I've gotten more involved with my local community and seen that we are able to talk through our differences and make collaborative advances to dealing with some of the issues, I see that process needing to be taken to the higher levels of politics, because we're in desperate need of dealing with a lot of issues in the Western Slope that are not being discussed. They're being drowned out by the rhetoric. So I want to step up where I can and bring forth some of the conversation.
In some of your comments at the panel, you talked about common core values that might transcend political parties or even generation gaps like we're talking about here with millennials. What are some of those common core values that you think we all share?
So recently I've been involved with the Gunnison Public Lands Initiative, which is through Senator Bennett's office. And as the Gunnison Valley has developed more and more, there's a lot more users out on our public lands. And up until now, we haven't really had a broad conversation as far as how we want to see the future of our public lands and how, as a community, we want to define our future. And we had a lot of hard discussions, and that built trust. And we realized that no matter how we enjoy our public lands, that we have a love for them. We have a love for this place. We have a love for Western Colorado and the amazing landscape that we get to interact with every day. And from there, we were able to advance the conversation to really on-the-ground solutions to issues.
And the final panelist was former State Senator Gail Schwartz from Crested Butte. Schwartz was at the State House from 2006 till 2014 and was a University of Colorado regent from 2000 until 2006.
You know, my heart's in, obviously, the 3rd Congressional and throughout Western and Southern Colorado, having worked so hard for these communities and wanting to share my experience. You know, I'm not a candidate, but I am someone that can support other people looking at these opportunities, and we need to learn from each other. And it's to have this room filled with people that are passionate about what they believe is really a game changer for us, that we're coming together, we're communicating, we're coming from different communities and different perspectives, but most importantly, we understand what's at stake and how we can make a change.
Do you think in Western Colorado it can really have a strong presence out here that has been so traditionally Republican and conservative?
I think that so often people will say, God, I didn't know there are other people here that think like I do. You know, how often is that? Well, people need a forum, and be it Resist, Indivisible, Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders. I mean, people need to come together and feel that they have a way to express themselves and join part of a movement. I honestly believe that when you have loud voices dominating the conversation, we have to recognize sometimes those voices are not the majority. Look at our public lands issue. The majority of the population of the Western states wants to preserve our public lands for our future. It's our heritage. But also they want to preserve it for recreation and conservation and growing communities, and are less invested in more oil and gas development. So I think that we have very loud voices about our public lands being sold and turned over and all those things. Well, they're not in the majority. They're in the minority. And it's our opportunity to say, let's give a place for people to have a voice, because surprisingly, they could be in the majority.
That was former State Senator Gail Schwartz at the D3 Indivisible Summit last Friday in Ridgeway. Here on Local Motion, we heard from all 5 panelists who spoke at the Voices of the District workshop during the summit. We also heard from filmmaker Jacob Smith, who talked about the new documentary film, Waking the Sleeping Giant. Both the movie and the summit are products of the ongoing progressive movement sparked by Senator Bernie Sanders during his campaign for president last year. Thanks so much for listening to Local Motion here on KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould.